Shalom. Today, the 19th day of the month of Elul of the year 5776, corresponding to the 22nd of September of the year 2016. And today we continue with our studies of Mishnah Makot in Chapter 1, beginning with the 6th Mishnah, Mishnah Vov, which continues with the subject of the Edim Zomimim, the witnesses that are treacherous, they are plotting against a person, under what conditions they are going to be killed. And our Mishnah now reflects an interesting debate between the tradition that we have received from our rabbis and sages, the sages of the Mishnah and the Talmud, as opposed to the way that the text of the Torah was interpreted by the group known as the Tzedokim, the Sadducees. The Sadducees, Tzedokim, were many of them from the priestly class in the time of the Second Temple, who did not accept some of the traditions of interpretation of the Torah text, which had been handed down through the prophets and through the whole line of tradition that we discussed in our introduction to the study of the Mishnah, following through the introduction of Maimonides' Rambam to his Mishnah Torah. And in the Torah, in the book of Deuteronomy, in chapter 19, the portion that speaks about the Edim Zomimim from verses 15 onwards, in verse 17 of chapter 19 of Deuteronomy, it's talking about the two people that are engaged in a legal dispute before the court, before the priests and the judges of their times. And in verse 18, the Torah tells us that the judges shall investigate very well. If they find that the witness is a false witness, that he testified falsely against his brother, verse 19, the all-important verse here, Va'asisem loy ka'asher zomam la'asois la'ochiv. You shall do to him according as he plotted to do to his brother. Now the question is, let us say that a false witness had testified against somebody that was guilty of a capital crime. He was seen flagrantly breaking the Shabbat, or he was seen flagrantly committing one of the most serious incest offenses, whose penalty is stoning. If he was proven to be a false witness, and that he'd wanted to have the other person executed, he is only executed, according to the rabbinical teaching, if the intended victim has been convicted of the offense but not yet executed. According to our sages, according to their tradition, the interpretation of Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 19, you shall do to him as he plotted to do to his brother. Now, we shall see in our Mishnah how our sages interpreted this verse exactly, as opposed to how the Sadducees interpreted it. Makot chapter 1, Mishnah 6, Mishnah Vov, Ein ho'edim zomimin ne'rogin. The edim zomimin, the treacherous witnesses, are not themselves executed. Ad sheyigomer adin, until the court case has been completed. In other words, only when the intended victim has been judged by the court to be guilty on the basis of their evidence, only if they were exposed after that would they be executed, and not before. If they were exposed before the sentence was given, they would not be executed because no legal sentence had been passed. So this is the opinion of our sages. So now the Mishnah goes into this dispute with the Sadducees, the Tzedokim. Shehari atzedokin omrim. The Sadducees say, ad sheyehoreg. Only when the intended victim has been executed shall the false witnesses, when they are exposed, be executed. Sheneemar nefesh tachas nefesh. The Torah states a soul for a soul. Only if the soul of the victim has been removed from the world through his execution, only then would the treacherous witness, when discovered, be executed. Now, the verse as we have it quoted here in our Mishnah is not exactly the verse that is being quoted. The actual the verse Nefesh Tachas Nefesh appears elsewhere in the Torah in Exodus, but the verse that is really being explained here, brought here as evidence, is verse 21, which says, "Don't let your eye have pity on the false witness." And there it says, "Nefesh be nefesh." Soul for a soul, ayin b'ayin, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, hand for a hand, foot for a foot. So, that is what the Sadducees interpret this verse. But our sages interpreted differently. The Mishnah here says, let us go on. Omru lohem chachomim, the sages of our Talmudic tradition said to those Sadducees, v'haloi chvor ne'emar, surely it is already said in the previous verse in Deuteronomy chapter 19, v'asisem loy ka'asher zomam la'asois, you shall do to him, to the false witness, as he plotted to do to his brother. V'harei ochiv kayom, that means that according to the verse, the brother, the other person, the intended victim, is still alive. In other words, our sages deduced from this verse that the treacherous witness was plotting to do something against a person who is still alive, even though the verdict has been passed against him, but he's still his brother, he's still alive. Harei ochiv kayom. Ve'imkein lo monemah nefesh tachas nefesh. If so, why does the Torah go on to say nefesh benefesh, a soul for a soul? And now the rabbinic tradition gives their answer to the verse cited by the Sadducees. Yochol mishon shekiblu eduson yehoregu. Could it be that we would interpret this verse that from the hour, from the moment that they received their testimony, that the court heard the testimony of the false witnesses, they shall already be executed, even if no guilty verdict has been passed on the intended victim, but they have already given their false evidence, would from that point on they be liable to execution? Talmud Leimar, no. Talmud, the learning that comes out of the verse of the Torah, comes to say to you, nefesh tachas nefesh. Only a soul is only taken from the treacherous witness in place of the soul of the man who has been condemned to death, even though he's not yet been executed. Ho einon neherogin ad shigomer adin. Ho, behold, out of this we deduce they are not executed until the completion of the court case, only when the intended victim has been condemned to death can the false witness be executed for what they wanted to do to him. But if he had already been executed, the Sadducees said, even then, if the false witness was exposed, he too would be executed. But our sages said, no, only if he had been condemned but not yet executed, and then their false testimony was exposed, only then would they be executed. Well, now Mishnah Zion, the seventh Mishnah, goes on into the specific laws of testimony and what counts as valid testimony in a bet din, where, as discussed, the Torah requires for capital cases two valid witnesses. Chapter Mishnah 7, Al pi shnayim edim oy shlosha edim yumas hames. According to the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses, shall be put to death the dead individual, the executed man. He must, can only be executed on the testimony of two or three witnesses. So the Mishnah expresses the obvious question, im miskayemes el edus mishnayim, if the edus, the testimony, is established, it's valid, when there are two, and that is a principle of Torah jurisprudence, that is simply the law of the Torah, that where there are two valid witnesses, two kosher witnesses who are not disqualified through transgressions or anything else, they determine the case. If the Torah says two is enough, lomo porad akosa bishlesho, why did the written verse also specify the presence of a third witness if two are enough? It's true, three is more credible than two, but why do we need to tell this? Elo lahakish shloisho lishnayim. It comes to bang together three with two, to compare three against two, to tell you that there's something that if there was a team of three witnesses, they would have in common if there was a team of only two. Ma shloisho mazimines hashnayim. Just like a team of three witnesses would have the power to determine another team of two witnesses to be false witnesses, they could testify that those two over there, they are testifying falsely because they weren't even there that day, they were with us. Just like three people could invalidate and discredit two, af hashnayim, so even two witnesses would be sufficient, yozomu es hashlosha, if two witnesses came along and testified of a band of three, no, you weren't there, you were with us, those two could nail the other three as false witnesses. Uminayin afilu meo, from where in the scripture do we have support, even if it was 100, that as we discussed in the previous Mishnah, Mishnah Hay, the fifth Mishnah, even if there were 100 witnesses, two alone could disqualify those 100 if the two were testifying that the other 100 were not there. How do we know this? Talmud Leimar Edim, because the same verse that we quoted above, Al pi shnayim edim o shlosha edim, by the mouth of two witnesses or three witnesses, edim comes to multiply the number of people that could be involved. If a band of two were able to discredit even 100 edim, that is the suggestion of the word in the biblical text, edim, the witnesses, any number. Rabbi Shimon tells us, Ma shnaim einon neherogin ad sheyehi shnehem zoymemin. Just like two witnesses would only be executed if you establish that the two of them were false witnesses. It would not be enough merely to discredit one of them, to say that one of them had not been there. That would not be enough to nail either him or the other. There has to be a testimony of two witnesses that would in itself be sufficient to incriminate the person standing trial. Just like two would only be executed, two false witnesses, if they were both proven to be false witnesses. Av shloisho eino neherogin an shiyu shlosh don zimmermin. So three witnesses, if they were all testifying against the man and they were all proven to be false witnesses, they would only be executed if all three of them were proven to be false witnesses. In other words, we are looking here at something that we'll be talking about in more detail presently. What happens if there is a group of people who all come along to testify together as one band? If that is the case, if you want to nail them as false witnesses, you have to discredit all of them, as we shall see. Even three would only be executed if all three were exposed as being treacherous witnesses. Edim Zimmerman. Uminayin afilu meyo, Rabbi Shimon continues. Uminayin, from where do we learn? Afilu meyo, even if there were 100 who were all coming together as one band of witnesses, you have to discredit the lot of them altogether. Talmud Leimar, Edim. The verse teaches you to understand through that word in the Hebrew text, Edim, witnesses, it goes up to any number. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Rabbi Akiva adds the following, Leivo hashlishi elo lehachmir olov. The third witness mentioned in our verse in Deuteronomy chapter 17, the third witness, he comes in only to add astringency to him. V'laso is dinoi kayoitze bo elu, to make his law the same as those two. If there were two who were proven to be false witnesses, they would try to get somebody executed, they will be executed. If there was a third with them, and he also testified, he would also be executed. We don't say, well, since two would be enough, leave the third guy alone. He would also get executed. Ve'im kein onash hakosov lenitpo le'ovrei avero ke'ovrei avero. If so, now Rabbi Akiva is going to make an inference from this teaching, a very beautiful inference. If the written text of the Torah punishes somebody who merely joins transgressors of a transgression, this third witness joined another two to, as it were, add force to their false testimony. If the Torah punished him like it punishes them, ke'ovrei avero, just as the Torah punishes the actual transgressors, it also punishes the one that attaches himself to them. Alachas kamo vochamo, how much more so? Yeshalem sochol nal nitpol le'oisei mitzvah ke'oisei mitzvah. How much more will God's written law pay a reward to somebody even who merely joins those who are carrying out a commandment, somebody who joins the crowd of people celebrating the Shabbat or the festival or performing some other mitzvah, somebody who merely joins them will receive a reward just like those who actually perform the mitzvah. It's a great benefit to join other people who are performing a mitzvah. Rabbi Akiva's very beautiful teaching from the law of the penalty for the third witness, he infers from this that there's a correspondingly good aspect to this. Now we come to the eighth Mishnah, Makot, Tractate Makot, Mishnah Chet, Mishnah 8, Ma Shnayim. Nimso echon mehem koroiv oi posel eduson betelo. Just as if there were two witnesses, if there were only two, and one of them was found out to be a relative of the other, or invalid through having committed some transgression, be it from the Torah or one of the rabbinical prohibitions that would invalidate a witness. If one of them was later discovered to be invalid or a relative, a duson betelo, their testimony would be invalid. Af shleisha, so too if there were a band of three witnesses who all came together. Nimso echod mehem korov epostle, if one of those three was found out to be a relative or invalid for testimony. Eduson Betela, the whole testimony of those three presented together before the court would be invalidated. Enough to invalidate one of the mitzvahs if they are already joining together as a band, and we shall see presently what this means in more detail. If they are joined as a band testifying together, the disqualification of one of them disqualifies the whole testimony. Minayin afilu me'o? From where do we learn even if there were 100 witnesses all coming together to testify, if one of them was found to be a relative of another or disqualified from testifying through a transgression, the whole team of 100 would be disqualified. Talmud Lemar Edim, the verse there we quoted earlier, has the repeated word Edim, the witnesses, meaning that they're all one band together. Omar Rabbi Yose b'madavarim amudim, Rabbi Yose says, in which case were these words said that a whole band of witnesses will be disqualified if one of them is disqualified? But dine nefoshos, in laws of related to capital offenses, where the death penalty might become involved, that is when we have this stringency that if there's even one disqualification, a whole band of witnesses, they're all disqualified. That would apply, says Rabbi Yose, in the stringent cases of capital crimes. Aval bedinim mamonos. But when it comes to the laws of financial transactions, theft, loans, default, and so on and so forth, tiskaimo edus b'she'or, let the testimony be affirmed and established by the other witnesses. Cross off the invalid witnesses, but hear all the other witnesses. Let's have a leniency. Rabbi Judah the prince, Rabbi Yehuda Nosi, the mechaber of the Mishneh, Rabbi presents his own opinion with complete neutrality, just as he presents the other opinion. Echod dinei momonos ve'echod dinei nefoshos. Rabbi says it's one of the same if it is monetary, financial cases, and one of the same if it is capital cases. It's always one witness, the whole band is disqualified, and that is the halacha. The emosai, and when do we say the above? Bisman shehisru bohen. When they gave a warning to them. Here we are talking to about one of the indispensable provisions of the Torah law of edut, of testimony. First of all, the person who is committing the alleged crime has to have received a due warning before committing the offense. You are about to transgress the Shabbat, and the penalty for that is stoning. You are about to worship an idol, and the penalty for that is execution. If the person goes ahead and says, despite what you say, he goes ahead, then he is liable. That is called hatra'ah, warning, due warning. And there has to be due warning from the witnesses or in the presence of the witnesses. And for this warning to take hold, the witnesses have to have agreed that they are now standing, witnessing this event. Aval bisman shelo isru bohen, at a time when due warning was not given to them, what should do two brothers who saw one person that killed somebody? If two brothers happened to be standing by while this terrible murder took place, and there were other witnesses as well, it would be the fact that they're both standing there does not disqualify the whole testimony against the murderer. In other words, if they understand, those two brothers, that only one of them may testify, One of them will join the valid witnesses testifying. The other will say, well, I'm not part of that testimony. And therefore, the fact that this other brother was standing there watching does not disqualify the whole testimony, and you can execute the murderer on the strength of their testimony. Well, now, the next Mishnah, Mishnah Tet, the ninth Mishnah of Makot, chapter 1, is going to talk about the conditions under which a group of witnesses are considered to be one group of witnesses. If there were two people, in other words, two witnesses, watching him from this window, there's two others who are watching him, what's going on out there from another window, from the second window. And there's one person who is warning the intending transgressor in the middle, where both sets of witnesses from their respective windows can see this man in the middle giving the warning and seeing the act which is about to be carried out. Bizman shemiktoson roin elu es elu, at a time when part of each set of two through the windows can see one another, even if only one of those two sets can see the other set, but they both see the man down there about to do the act and the man there who's going to give him the warning, and one of the two from this window can see one of the two at the other window. Hare elu edus echos. That is all considered one testimony, one band of witnesses. And that means that it will be enough if one of those four from the two windows turns out to be a brother or invalid, since they're all edus achas, is there still one testimony? If he was found to be invalid, that would overthrow the whole testimony. It could not be accepted in the rabbinical court. V'im lav, if they can't, if all of these conditions are not met, hare elu shtei eduyos, there are two separate testimonies. In other words, if the man there in the middle is about to commit the act, and the man in the middle is warning him, if the two sets of witnesses from the two sets of windows cannot see one another, they are two separate sets of testimony, and if one of those at one of the windows turns out to be invalid, it would not invalidate the testimony of the guys looking out of the other window. Lefichoch, as a consequence of this, a very interesting corollary. Im nimtzeis achas mehen zoimemes. If there was found out, it was found out that one of those two separate sets of witnesses was treacherous, that they had made it up, they weren't there, they were proven not to have been there. Hu vehen ne'erogin. He, namely the person that did the crime, and those two that were proven to be false witnesses, they're both going to be executed. The criminal will be executed on the strength of the testimony that has not been controverted. The two who were looking from the window and they were not controverted, they, on their strength, he, the criminal, would get executed. The Hain, and now the other set of witnesses who were proven to be false witnesses, they too would be executed because they were trying to nail the intended victim. V'hashnio p'tura, the second set of witnesses on whose strength the murderer was condemned, they would be exempt because they are not Edim Zomerman. Rabbi Yosi Omer, Rabbi Yosi says, "Le'olam ein ne'rogin ad shehu pi shnei edov masrin boy." Rabbi Yosi says they are never executed. Nobody is executed without a due warning that comes from two witnesses, not just one. According to Rabbi Yosi, they are never executed ad shehu pi shnei edov, until the mouth of his two witnesses, Masrin Boy shall be warning the intended transgressor. And he derives it from the verse in Deuteronomy chapter 17, Shene Emar, as it says, Al pi shnayim edim, according to the mouth of two witnesses. Rabbi Yossi's opinion is not the accepted opinion. The accepted opinion is that it's sufficient for one person to administer the warning and for two witnesses to witness the act. Dova Achir, now another word, another teaching that comes out of that same verse. Al pi shnayim edim, the Torah says, according to the mouth of two witnesses. What do we learn from this? A law of legal procedure. Sheloi sehei sanedrin sheimas mi pi aturgimon. That you shall not have the Sanhedrin hearing from the mouth of a translator. The Sanhedrin have to understand the language of the person on trial and the language of the witnesses. That is why the members of the great Sanhedrin between them had to know the 70 root languages of the world. The Sanhedrin cannot rely upon a translator to base their legal decisions. Well, now we come to the closing Mishnah of our chapter, Mishnah Yud of the first chapter of Makot. Mishenikbar dinoi uvorach. Somebody whose case has been completed, he's been given his verdict. Uvorach, and he fled, he tried to avoid the penalty. Uvor lifnei oisoi veis din. If he now comes back to the same court, Ein soisrim es dinoi, they do not overturn his verdict. Just because he fled, that does not mean that he gets off. More than that, kol mokom sheyamdu shnayim, every place where two people, two valid witnesses, get up, v'yomru, they say, me'idin ono be'ish pleini, shenigmar dino be'beis dinoi, we testify against a certain individual that his verdict was finalized in front of the Bet Din, the court shel Pliny of such and such a judge. Ufloini, Ufloini Eidov, and Mr. So-and-so and Mr. So-and-so were the witnesses against that individual. Hareze Yehoreg. That individual will now be executed on the strength of the testimony of these two witnesses who are testifying that he had been condemned to death by another court and had fled. And now our Mishnah concludes with some general laws about the Sanhedrin and its ability to adjudicate in capital cases. The whole of chapter 2 of this tractate of Makot will be dealing with laws of murder and manslaughter and the cities of refuge in cases of unwitting manslaughter. So now, as a conclusion to chapter 1 about the specific laws of Edim Zomimin, we deal with laws relating to execution by Sanhedrin. Chapter 3 of the tractate will get to the subject of its name, Makot, the lashes for infringing Torah prohibitions not involving the death penalty. But just now to conclude with the end of the last Mishnah of Makot, Chapter 1, Mishnah Yud, Mishnah 10, Hari Sanhedrin Noeges Bo'oretz Uvechutz La'oretz. The Sanhedrin Noeges, it can apply both in the land of Israel, the Holy Land, and outside of the land of Israel. That is to say that the Sanhedrin can only adjudicate in capital cases when the temple is standing. This we learn out from the verse that says about the person being brought before the priests and the judges. Only when the priests of the temple are there does the Sanhedrin have authority to execute. But the Sanhedrin, at a time when the temple was standing, had the authority to execute and impose other penalties like fines, the biblical fines, etc., both in Israel and outside the land. Their authority in temple times was not restricted to the land of Israel. So now in the ideal world of the Mishnah tells us, Sanhedrin ha-horeges echod b'shavua nikreis chavlonis, a Sanhedrin that executed once in 7 years is already called the destructive Sanhedrin. We see here a situation unimaginable, unfortunately, in our ruthless and bloody times, where murders and executions, judicial and extrajudicial, are carried out every day. Here in the times when the ideal times when the temple is standing and peace reigns in the land, if there was one execution in 7 years, that would already be called the destructive Sanhedrin. It's their responsibility to spread peace and not to allow crimes. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah Omer, Echod l'shivim shana, Rabbi Elazar, the son of Azariah, who took over the Nasiut, the head of the Sanhedrin after Rabban Gamliel, he says that if it was once in 70 years that they executed, that would be called the destructive Sanhedrin. Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva Omerim, Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Akiva, they say, Ilu Oyinu b'Sanhedrin, if we had been in the Sanhedrin, because of course they were teaching in the immediate aftermath of the destruction of the Second Temple, if we had been there, Leine Rag Odam Mi'olam, a person would never have been killed ever. Well, that sounds like contemporary liberal doctrine, that there should be no executions. Whether that is so or not, Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon are saying that they would have been so stringent in the investigations into the testimony, they would always have found a way not to have the person actually executed. They might have put him in prison for life, but not have him executed. But then Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Rabban Shimon from the princely line of the heads of the Sanhedrin, the descendant of Hillel, he says, Af ein marbim sheikhvei domem b'Yisrael. Those two, Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva, with that approach, they would multiply shedders of blood in Israel. They would cause a rash of murders and killings, because the purpose of the law is to deter prospective criminals. And if you have no deterrence, you will encourage and multiply criminality in the land. With that, we conclude the first chapter of the Mishnah of Makot.